You're listening to the radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel, Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of 2 Samuel. Now, here's Pastor Sandy in the book of 2 Samuel as he teaches through chapters 18 through 20.
He was the guy that when David was leaving Jerusalem, he was the guy who came alongside the road and started hurling curses and throwing stones and kicking up dust at David, trying to tell him he got what he deserved. You remember this guy. Well, there were 1,000 men of Benjamin with him, and Ziba, the servant of the house of Saul, and his 15 sons and his 20 servants with him, and they went over the Jordan before the king. Then a ferry boat went across to carry over the king's household and to do what he thought good. You remember the last time David crossed the Jordan was at night, while the world was dark. Now he comes back in the light of day. The first time he crossed the Jordan, he was suffering. Now he comes back victorious. Hey, this is David's second coming. He's coming as king a second time. Keep that in mind. And of course, this is all a type of the son of David's second coming. Jesus, the Davidic heir, will also come to earth a second time. And Jesus, too, will return victorious. In his first stint as king of the Jews, Jesus, just like David, was run out of town. He was rejected by his own relatives, the Hebrews. He was betrayed by an Ahithophel, a man by the name of Judas. He was crucified in a coup d'etat. The rebellious hearts of men rejected him. But one day, Jesus is going to return to conquer his enemies. And he's going to come to Jerusalem, and he's going to sit on the throne and reign over this earth forever. Well, verse 18 tells us, "Now Shimei, the son of Gera, he fell down before the king when he had crossed the Jordan." Shimei knows he'd made the wrong choice. He had chosen the wrong side. I mean, he had supported Absalom. He'd been brutal toward David, and now he realized he's made a mistake. And then he said to the king, "Do not let my lord impute iniquity to me, or remember what wrong your servant did on the day that my lord the king left Jerusalem, that the king should take it to heart. For I, your servant, know that I have sinned. Therefore, here I am, the first to come today of all the house of Joseph to go down to meet my lord the king." He repents. He cries out for mercy of how he treated David. But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, answered and said, "Shall not Shimei be put to death for this, because he cursed the Lord's anointed?" Abishai wanted to kill him when he first started shouting and railing and throwing rocks and kicking dirt and everything else. He wanted to shut his mouth the first time. Now he wants to punish him now. But David said, "What have I to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah, that you should be adversaries to me today? Shall any man be put to death today in Israel?" You know, the sons of Zeruiah remind me of the sons of Zebedee. James and John, sons of thunder, they were called. They had such fiery tempers, James and John. You remember the story back in Luke chapter 9 when the Samaritans refused to let Jesus pass through their borders? It was James and John who shouted out, "Lord, do you want us to command fire to come down from heaven and consume them just like Elijah did?" And there we're told Jesus turned and rebuked them and said, "You do not know what manner of spirit you are of. For the Son of Man did not come to destroy men's lives, but to save them." Here, Abishai, he does not know what manner of spirit he is of. This is not a day of judgment. This is an opportunity to show mercy. And nobody was better at it than David. He says, "For do I not know that today I'm king over Israel?" Therefore, the king said to Shimei, "You shall not die." And the king swore to him. As Jesus taught us, David pardoned his enemies. He loved those who reviled and forsook him, just as Jesus does. And even though these Jews hurled insults at David and later will hurl insults at Jesus, you remember when Jesus stands before Pilate, when Jesus carries the cross to Calvary, they too stood at the cross and they mocked Jesus and they hurled their insults. But one day, Jesus will be like David and he too will forgive the Shimeites, and he will issue pardons as well. Well, verse 24. Now Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king, and he had not cared for his feet, nor trimmed his mustache, nor washed his clothes from the day the king departed until the day he returned in peace. Now all of this shows that he was truly remorseful over the fact that David had left the city of Jerusalem, that he was a supporter of David. And so it was, when he had come to Jerusalem to meet the king, that the king said to him, "Why did you not go with me, Mephibosheth?" Now you remember, Mephibosheth was crippled. He couldn't walk on his own. His servant Ziba was the one who helped transport him. And you remember what Ziba had told David earlier. He had said that Mephibosheth stayed behind in Jerusalem to support Absalom and to claim part of Saul's inheritance. And as a result, David had given all of Mephibosheth's belongings to Ziba. But here we have a different story, don't we? This is not necessarily what happened. This is not what Mephibosheth says has happened. And now Mephibosheth gets an opportunity to speak for himself. He answered, "My lord, O king, my servant deceived me." In other words, Ziba, you know, who said, "I stayed behind to support Absalom," he deceived me. "For your servant said, 'I will saddle a donkey for myself that I may ride on it and go to the king,' because your servant is lame. And he has slandered your servant to my lord the king. But my lord the king is like the angel of God, for all my father's house were but dead men before the lord the king. Yet you shall set your servant among those who eat at your own table." Mephibosheth is still overwhelmed at David's original generosity. You remember how that on behalf of his father, Jonathan, David had adopted Mephibosheth into his own family, and he's still filled with gratitude. But he's saying, you know, "Hey, I've been hoodwinked. You know, Ziba said, 'Hey, you get ready, we'll go out to meet with David.'" And then while the crippled guy's getting dressed and all, he runs off and leaves him. And then he goes out to David and he says, "Oh, you know, Mephibosheth, He's forsaken you." At least that now is Mephibosheth's story. He says, "Therefore, what right have I still to cry out anymore to the king?" And this is a wonderful attitude. He thinks David has already been more kind, more generous than he deserves, and he doesn't feel appropriate to bug the king for more. But the king said to him, "Why do you not speak any more of your matters? I have said, 'You and Ziba divide the land.'" Now, I wonder which of these two men David really believed. Did he believe Mephibosheth? Did he believe Ziba? You know, it's possible he had his doubts about both. And that's why he just sort of split the inheritance in half. He couldn't determine which one to believe, and so he just gave half to Mephibosheth, half to Ziba. Maybe there was truth to both stories. You don't really know. Which proves what every marriage counselor already knows. There are two sides to every story. Indeed, they are. And at times, it's difficult to determine who's really telling the truth. Well, then Mephibosheth said to the king, "Rather, let him take it all, inasmuch as my lord the king has come back in peace to his own house." What a wonderful sentiment there. Well, David also blesses the house of a man, an old man named Brasilia. This was the guy who had supplied David food and drink while he was living in exile in Mahanaim. Verse 31. And Brasilia, the Gileadite, came down from Rogalim and went across the Jordan with the king to escort him across the Jordan. Now, Brasilia was a very aged man, 80 years old. And he had provided the king with supplies while he stayed at Mahanaim, for he was a very rich man. And the king said to Brasilia, "Come across with me, and I will provide for you while you are with me in Jerusalem." But Brasilia said to the king, "How long have I to live that I should go up with the king to Jerusalem? I'm an old man. I'll probably be dead by the time I get to Jerusalem." He says, "I am today 80 years old. Can I discern between the good and the bad? Can your servant taste what I eat or what I drink? Can I hear any longer the voice of singing men and singing women? Why then should your servant be a further burden to my lord the king? Your servant will go a little way across the Jordan with the king, and why should the king repay me with such a reward? It's amazing that Brasileia did such a simple thing. You remember, he brought the king a few supplies. That's basically all he did. He brought him a few bedrolls, some canned goods, some wheat, some beans, some lentils, some seeds, some honey and curds, some cheese, just the basic stuff. Wasn't a big sacrifice at all. In fact, we're told that this guy was a very rich man. But now David returns and he wants to reward Brasileia. And it just goes to show me that it doesn't take much to get a reward from Jesus. I think sometimes we're under this wrong conception that if we're not out, you know, taking the gospel to the pygmies in the deepest, darkest jungle and risking our lives and climbing over mountains and swimming through alligator-infested rivers, you know, we're not going to get anything from the Lord. We won't get a reward. But to me, this story shows me that it doesn't take much. Jesus is so good with his gifts. He's so quick to reward us. Hey, when he comes back, Jesus too is going to give rewards. And it might not take as much as we think to get in line for a crown or two. Got any lentils? Can you pass the cheese to a needy person? And you know, it's never too late to rack up some rewards. Notice this. Brasileia was 80 years old. I think I got a picture of him. That's my idea of Brasileia. He said he'd lost his wits. He couldn't discern good and bad. Said he lost his taste. He was hard of hearing. The poor guy was barely able to walk. And yet none of that mattered. It didn't stop him from sharing his stuff. Here's what Brasileia did, and he got a reward from Jesus. He saw a need that he could meet, and he met it. And when he gets to heaven, he's going to hear, "Well done, good and faithful servant." Did you realize it is really just that simple to get a reward from Jesus? See a need you can meet and just meet it. And one day, you'll get a reward from Jesus. Just pass the cheese, man. A cup of beans earns a crown of blessing. Isn't that amazing? Well, please let your servant turn back again, that I may die in my own city near the grave of my father and mother. But here is your servant, Chimam. Let him cross over with my lord the king and do for him what seems good to you. And the king answered, Chimam shall cross over with me, and I will do for him what seems good to you. Now whatever you request of me, I will do for you. Then all the people went over the Jordan, and when the king had crossed over, the king kissed Brasileia, and he blessed him. And he returned to his own place. At the end of chapter 19, a squabble erupts between the northern tribes of Israel and the southern tribe of Judah over who is going to escort the king to Jerusalem. It amazes me. Just a few months earlier, he had exited the capital in disgrace. No one was claiming David. The fickleness of people. You know, few people stood with David in the tough times. But now that the bandwagon is rolling again, it's all aboard. Everybody's wanting a piece of the king now that he's popular. Verse 40. Now the king went on to Gilgal, and Chinnam went on with him. And all the people of Judah escorted the king and also half the people of Israel. And just then all the men of Israel came to the king and said to the king, why have our brethren, the men of Judah, stolen you away and brought the king, his household, and all David's men with him across the Jordan? So all the men of Judah answered the men of Israel, because the king is a close relative of ours. Why then are you angry over this matter? Have we ever eaten at the king's expense, or has he given us any gift? And the men of Israel answered the men of Judah and said, we have 10 shares in the king, since they were 10 tribes in the north. We also have more right to David than you. Why then do you despise us? Were we not the first to advise bringing back our king? Yet the words of the men of Judah were fiercer than the words of the men of Israel. And apparently Judah won out. But this little riff at the end of chapter 19, it creates another rebellion in chapter 20. Sheba balks at the tribe of Judah's claim to David, and he organizes his own revolt. And there happened to be a rebel whose name was Sheba, the son of Bichri, a Benjamite. And he blew a trumpet and said, "We have no share in David, nor do we have inheritance in the son of Jesse. Every man to his tents, O Israel." So every man of Israel deserted David and followed Sheba, the son of Bichri. And the men of Judah from the Jordan as far as Jerusalem remained loyal to their king. And so the same split occurs that we've seen before. The 10 tribes in the north, they rally together to form sort of their own entity. And then the larger tribe in the south, Judah, they sort of rally together. And so it's Israel in the north versus Judah in the south. Now, David came to his house at Jerusalem. And the king took the 10 women, his concubines, whom he had left to keep the house, and put them in seclusion and supported them, but did not go into them. You remember they had been defiled by Absalom. And so they were shut up to the day of their death, living in widowhood. And the king said to Amasa, "Assemble the men of Judah for me within 3 days and be present here yourself." So Amasa went to assemble the men of Judah, but he delayed longer than the set time which David had appointed him. And David said to Abishai, "Now Sheba, the son of Bichri, will do us more harm than Absalom. Take your Lord's servants and pursue him, lest he find for himself fortified cities and escape us." And so Joab's men with the Cherethites and the Pelethites, who were David's personal bodyguards, and all the mighty men went out after him. And they went out of Jerusalem to pursue Sheba, the son of Bichri. Now when they were at the large stone, which is in Gibeon, Amasa came before them. Now Joab was dressed in battle armor. On it was a belt with a sword fastened in its sheath at his hips. And as he was going forward, it fell out. The Jewish historian Josephus says that Joab dropped the sword intentionally so that he would have an excuse to approach Amasa with an unsheathed sword, with a naked sword. Then Joab said to Amasa, "Are you in health, my brother?"
"If you are, it's not going to last long." Said it under his breath, I guess.
And Joab took Amasa by the beard with his right hand to kiss him. Be careful of a kiss. Jesus was betrayed by a kiss. How many people do you know have been betrayed by a kiss, a fake show of affection and loyalty? But Amasa did not notice the sword that was in Joab's hand, and he struck him with it in the stomach, and his entrails poured out on the ground, and he did not strike him again, didn't need to. Thus he died. Amasa was Joab's rival, a very dangerous position to be in, Joab's rival. And Joab does to Amasa exactly what he'd done earlier to Abner. He guts him like a fresh fish. Well, then Joab and Abishai, his brother, they pursued Sheba, the son of Bichri. Meanwhile, one of Joab's men stood near Amasa and said, "Whoever favors Joab and whoever is for David, follow Joab." But Amasa wallowed in his blood in the middle of the highway. And when the men saw that all the people stood still, he moved Amasa from the highway to the field and threw a garment over him. When he saw that everyone who had come upon him halted. Amasa's murder was done in broad daylight. Joab made no attempt whatsoever to keep it a secret. He stabbed his rival by the road and left him squirming and writhing in his own pool of blood right between the white lines. I mean, this was a cold-blooded, unwarranted murder, an injustice, a selfish act of power grabbing. And the people, they halted. They stopped when they saw the evidence, when they saw Amasa squirming in the middle of the road. But notice this. But when he was removed from the highway, all the people went on after Joab. In other words, out of sight, out of mind. Did you know this is why abortion is still legal in our country? Because it is an invisible crime. No one sees the victims. No one sees their torture. If an injustice doesn't make it into the headlines, folks tend to forget it. Or as soon as it's gone from the headlines, out of sight, out of mind. Sweep the issue under the rug. Just sort of sweep it out of the way, and people will neglect it. They'll go on their merry way. They'll forget that it ever happened. Nothing's really changed from these times until today. Well, when he was removed from the highway, all the people went on after Joab to pursue Sheba, the son of Bichri. And he went through all the tribes of Israel to Abel and Beth Maacah and all the Barites. And so they were gathered together and also went after Sheba. Then they came and besieged him in Abel of Beth Maacah. And they cast up a siege mound against the city, and it stood by the rampart. And all the people who were with Joab, they battered the wall to throw it down. Then a wise woman cried out from the city, "Hear, hear, please say to Joab, come nearby that I may speak with you." And when he had come near to her, the woman said, "Are you Joab?" And he answered, "I am." And then she said to him, "Hear the words of your maidservant." And he answered, "I'm listening." And so she spoke, saying, "They used to talk in former times, saying, they shall surely seek guidance at Abel, and so they would end disputes. I am among the peaceable and faithful in Israel. You seek to destroy a city and a mother in Israel. Why would you swallow up the inheritance of the Lord?" And Joab answered and said, far be it from me that I should swallow up or destroy. That is not so, but a man from the mountains of Ephraim, Sheba the son of Bichri by name, has raised his hand against the king, against David. Deliver him only, and I will depart from the city. I'll spare the whole city. Just want the guy." So the woman said to Joab, "His head will be thrown to you over the wall." Then the woman, in her wisdom, went to all the people, and they cut off the head of Sheba, the son of Bichri, and threw it out to Joab. Once again, this has happened before. Once again, Joab goes out to battle and David gets ahead. It's just amazing. David gets ahead again. Happened again. And then he blew a trumpet and they withdrew from the city, every man to his tent. So Joab returned to the king at Jerusalem. Chapter 20 ends with a list of David's cabinet in the latter years of his reign. And Joab was over all the army of Israel. Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, was over the Cherethites and the Pelethites. Adoram was in charge of revenue, or the head of the IRS. Now, it's interesting. In the previous list of David's cabinet, you can go back and look at it in chapter 8. There was no such position as in charge of revenue. That's because in the early years of David's reign, the government was being supported by the spoils of battle. David was winning victories and taking the loot, and it was stuffing the coffers. But in the later years of his reign, he had to start levying taxes, and thus the need for someone in charge of revenue. Jehoshaphat, the son of Ahilud, was the recorder, the state historian. Sheva was the scribe, the secretary of state. Zadok and Abiathar were the priests. And Ira, the Jerite, was a chief minister under David. And again, if you compare this list with the previous one, Ira replaces David's sons as his chief ministers. Evidently, David's family had become so corrupt that they could no longer be trusted with high levels in his government. And so they're replaced by this man named Ira. And there we have chapter 20 of 2 Samuel.
Thanks, Pastor Sandy, for sharing again with us from the book of 2 Samuel. We are so glad all of you have joined us today for Sandy Adams Radio. The story of King David teaches us that a heart of faith is deeply pleasing to God. When God looks into your heart, what is it that he sees there? Like David, we can ask God to search us and reveal the state of our heart to us. And like David, when he brings to mind anything that is outside his will, we can turn and follow God again. If you'd like someone to pray with you, call us at 770-736-2828. Once again, that number is 770-736-2828. Let us know your prayer requests or your praises. We'd love to rejoice with you too. If you live in or around Atlanta, Georgia, we'd like to invite you to Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain for our weekend services. You can find out all about the church, including directions and service times, at our website, sandyadams.org. Also, there you can find recordings of today's message and many other studies in the Word. We'd love to have you partner with us in ministry through prayer, and if the Lord leads, financially. We've set up a secure online page under Donate on sandyadams.org, where you can find more information. That's all we have time for today. Be sure to join us next time to hear more from the book of 2 Samuel with Pastor Sandy Adams.